podcast in the world. From WWE to DNA Impact, by way of the NWA, it's time for Reffin' It Up with legendary referee Brian Heppner and guest host, Mr. Reffin' Rant himself, Jimmy Corderas. An all-new episode starts in... This is Reffin' It Up.
Welcome back to Reffin' It Up. I am RJ. I am joined by the two greatest professional referees of all time. First and foremost, from the Great White North, Mr. Jimmy Corderas. And he's the one, he's the only, Mr. Brian Heppner. But first, Jimmy, how you doing, man?
I am doing great. I am pumped up for WrestleMania this weekend. And if it wasn't for the rain here in Toronto, I'd feel 100%. I'm only 99 now. But it's pouring buckets out there. And right now, yeah, that's cool. I don't care. I'm inside. I'm here talking to you guys, and I'm having a blast.
Yeah, as long as you stay upstream, you're good, Jimmy.
Yeah, but you know the old saying, a ship doesn't sink from the water around it. It sinks from the water that gets into it. So don't let all that stuff get into you and sink you.
I thought you said shit at first.
Almost.
Well, depending on where you are and what you say, then sometimes maybe. Brian, what's up, buddy?
Dude, I am fantastic. I am really ready to get into this last WrestleMania show before the big night. And we got a lot to talk about, boys, and very excited to talk and get in our brains, if you will, and figure out what we think is going to happen and what some of us know what's going to happen, but
we'll talk about it.
Yeah. But everything's great, guys. I'm ready for this. So let's go. And we got the Wildcat Chris Harris. So we're bringing him in. Yeah. So, big loaded episode here.
Not to bring anything down. I should have mentioned this to you guys before we started the broadcast. I just want to give a shout out to Dennis Knight, AKA Midium, who's going through some medical issues right now. Just sending him our love because, you know, he's a good dude and, you know, we just wish him all the best.
Absolutely. And also want to say one more thing to bring it back up again. Happy birthday to my girl, Tasha Steeles. Have a good day.
Awesome.
I got nothing. I'm like, I'll do the Barry Horowitz. I'll pet myself on the back. Why not?
Why not? Every once in a while, you got to do it really quickly, yeah, too, Brian. I noticed it the last time we did it, too. Too bad this isn't on video because you've got that PWI magazine in the background with my idol, Ricky Steamboat, on it with the United States Championship. I love that.
Yes, it's my favorite magazine.
If I ever come by your house and it's missing, I'm pleading innocent.
Oh God!
All right, so timestamp, okay, then Jimmy and Pierre, okay, timestamp that. Anyways, before we bring in Wildcat Chris Harris, why don't we send it up to our first count?
This is your one count.
As we mentioned, it is WrestleMania week, the granddaddy of them all, and another thing to look forward to this weekend. Both you, Jimmy, and you, Brian, will be in attendance for the Busted Open Party at the 2300 Arena from 2 to 4. That is the old ECW Arena, for those of you that don't know what the 2300 Arena is. But, Jimmy, man, this is something that they've done multiple times, just not for WrestleMania. They've done it at the major pay-per-views. And you both will be representing us strong there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this more than WrestleMania, to be honest with you. This is going to be amazing. Like the doors are going to open there at 12 o'clock. The fans, it's free for everyone to attend. You know, the first 2 hours are going to be hosted by Denise Salcedo and Thunder Rosa. And then after that, the crew will be there. And I can't wait to see the entire crew, including Bully and Tommy and Mark. And apparently there's a lot of other surprises I'm stoked, man. I'm stoked.
Jimmy, I am too, man. This week has been like forever to get to for me. It's finally upon us as we leave today to be up in Philly. Well, you leave today. I leave on Friday. But But man, I can't wait to just get there with all that personality, all these just wonderful minds of wrestling. And believe me, I am going to be a sponge there. So can't wait to be one.
You can't help but learn from those minds. That's what I hate to keep preaching this, but that's what I'm thinking is a little bit lost on some of this new generation is they're not sitting under that learning tree. They're not asking questions. They're not asking guys, hey, can you watch my match and tell me what I could do differently to help me improve? That's all it is. It's done throughout the years, not only in wrestling, in any sport, football, hockey, basketball, volleyball. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yep. And I do really want to thank from the bottom of my heart all the crew over there at Busted Open for allowing us in your home. And we can't wait to be in your home. And you never know, Busted Open, maybe we'll be part of your home. I don't know. Sounds pretty good to me, but we'll see.
I like the sound of that.
Me too. Kind of has a ring to it, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Calling it down the middle, brother.
Well, I've been saying this since day one, and both obviously you two guys know that firsthand, and a lot of the closer friends and listeners of the show know it, that I've been shouting from the mountaintops where you get guys like Bully Ray and Tommy Dreamer and Mark Henry, Thunder Rosa. You need a couple referees there to call, like you said, right down the line, Jimmy. But yeah, definitely looking forward to. Go ahead. Sorry.
Not to cut you off, but I will give them credit because they have no agenda. They don't pick sides. Everybody's open for critique and everybody's open for praise. And the one thing that they do that I don't hear a lot out there is they hold the refereeing to task. When it deserves to be, taken into account. Let's put it that way.
Well, and you and Brian both put over, and rightfully so, Bully Ray, Tommy, and Mark being those great minds of the business.
And don't forget Nick. And don't forget Nick.
Oh, and Nick. I'm sorry. I forgot Nick. And Nick will obviously be the guy that Brian will be hosting Busted Open with coming up very soon. But we'll get to that in a little bit.
We sure will get to that. and by the way, Jimmy, what you just said about Busted Open, we're the same here. We don't have favorites here. We just weigh in on our opinions.
No, exactly.
So I mean, it's the way it's supposed to be if you're doing things properly. This is not an AEW targeted show. It's not a WWE targeted show. Not a TNA. It's all of you guys out there, and we just give our opinions just like they do. So. It's awesome, man. I can't wait. I cannot wait.
And for those who think that we do have an agenda and are targeting one specific brand, grow a thick skin. All we're doing is trying to we're just giving our opinions and what we think will help because we want to try and elevate the product as best we can. And these are our opinions on how we think it can help.
That's right.
And I do have to give some flowers to, like I said, Jimmy, you mentioned all the great people that are evolved that have been in the business and Busted Open, but as much as I kind of sort of regret this because of his rants that he goes on and he gets all red in the face is one Dave LaGreca. As much as a lot of people disagree with him, he is a very shrewd businessman. He is probably one of the most dedicated wrestling fans that I've ever met because, his passion for this business and the dedication he has to the business that he wouldn't be doing this for 15 years. So you got to give him flowers too, in addition to, and on top of that, trying to hold down the fort when he's co-hosting with Bully and Tommy and all at the same time. That's got to be a hard job.
There would be no Busted Open without Dave LaGreca. End of story.
Absolutely. End of story. I mean, here's a guy who took a 1 hour a week show on Sirius Radio and turned it into a 7 day, 3 hours every day, and including 1 hour on Wednesday nights as well. So that brand is growing, and they're recognizing that the power behind the Busted Open brand.
Yeah. I joke and I kid, but I truly do respect the hell out of him too, for doing what he's been doing for this business for so long. And what he continues to do so, for the business.
Sorry, RJ. And the other thing too, is he doesn't claim to be a know-it-all or a journalist or anything like this. He's a fan giving his opinion and he's a historian and he doesn't hide that. And that's what I love about Dave. He doesn't hide that. And he also listens to everybody on that panel, all those great minds that he has on the show with him, and he learns from it. And it's amazing.
Last thing I want to say, too, about the Busted Open thing that I think is very important for new listeners or listeners that haven't caught what happened previously. But obviously, we were honored to have Dave LeGreco on a few weeks back. And obviously, if you are living under a rock, Dave LeGreco is a Cody crybaby and wants this story to be done probably more than anyone else, probably even more than Cody. But there was a bet that me and him made, and basically, if Cody does not finish the story, which is what my prediction is, and I'm not going to jump ahead. I'm just going to say I get to be take over as the host of Busted Open on Friday with Nick Nemeth. If I lose, he will be on our podcast and he will be in my shoes for 1 week. Oh, that's going to be tough. But anyway, that's just, you know, something else to look forward to this weekend when we're up there to probably battle that out a little bit more. So kind of interesting. But anyway, just wanted to catch you guys, that are listeners, up to par here.
Yeah. Well, like I said, check it out. If you're going to be in Philadelphia, come over, say hi to Jimmy, say hi to Brian at the Busted Open party there at the 2300 Arena from 2 to 4, doors open at 12. Stop by and say hi. You know, I would suggest that you guys get in there fairly quickly because it'll definitely fill up quick. But
and one more thing, RJ, I'm so sorry. I know I said one more thing. All right, this is truly one more thing about the Busted Open. I did tweet out to you guys that I do have a limited number of shirts that we have on our podcast mm-hmm. themed shirts. The reason why they're limited is because these are actually limited special shirts that I have gotten made for you guys at WrestleMania weekend. So then when I say limited, I'm being dead serious. I will have eight shirts and they will go quick. So, and hopefully you'll be there early like me and Jimmy will, and I'll be more than happy to sell them to you, and you will be running off and off with your specialized Reffin' It Up t-shirt, and it'll have me and Jimmy's beautiful faces on them too. So even another reason why.
Does it get any better than that?
It doesn't.
I don't know if it gets any better than that, guys, but like I said, check them out if we're definitely if you're in the area for that. But what I want to also touch on before we move, we got plenty of stuff to talk about, but the CM Punk interview that was on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani, dude, it's taken the internet by storm, man. Brian, we talked about it previous before we hit the record button, but to me anyways, I'm kind of sort of leaning, you know, towards what Punk's saying is true because it seemed to be lining up.
Leaning? I'm not leaning anywhere. I'm going where the truth is. And that's, to me, 100% factual. Listening to this guy's passion and talk about what he talked about and said the things he said, you know, to me, it's clear. To me, it's clear. And, you know, it got me thinking as well, and I'm not just making this up. This is actually really, really true. And if Jungle Boy were to listen to this, he would have to say, unless he's being the selfish prick that he's portraying to be, because I can't say he's that way, but I can't say he's not, because I had two stints at AEW, and I'm and this all hit me after I heard Bully's comments about Jungle Boy. Now, I go to AEW on two separate occasions and even went to lunch with Paul White, sat down and had some drinks with Christian, rallied around the entire locker room, and the one guy who never came up to me, I went up to him, which is not a problem with me. I have no problem. But he could give two fucks about me coming up to him at all. Maybe he doesn't know me, and that's okay. But that's still not the way to treat somebody that you know is a referee. I'm wearing a referee shirt, for Christ's sake, and pants. Maybe he's living under a rock and doesn't realize I'm a Hebner. But I never thought of it like that because my ego is not like that. But now that I sat here and thought about it, I'm like, wow, he was pretty much a prick when I was there. And he wasn't mean to me. He wasn't hateful to me. He could just give two shits about me. He was too worried about chasing tail in the back and getting his food and his catering and drinks out of the machine that TK provided for all the performers after the show. I'm not saying one word about him because I don't know enough to, but I could just say there was no respect shown for me in his locker room. And I'll just say that. I'll go back to other things, but that was the one thing I wanted to bring out. I can agree because I've had it go happen to me with Bully, and I can't see it being any different for anybody else.
Yeah, Jimmy, it's you hear a lot of it, whether you're, you know, I thoroughly suggest that whoever's listening to this, check it out on YouTube, the MMA Hour. Ariel Helwani does an absolutely fantastic job each and every time. And we heard a lot of the excerpts there from Busted Open as we listen on a regular basis, Jimmy. And it just seems to be, why at this point would he lie about it, right?
No, you're absolutely right, RJ. There is no reason for him to lie. There is none at all. And anybody who knows Punk could tell you he couldn't give a flying fernum if people believe him or not. He's going to tell the truth because he won't sugarcoat anything. You know, he seemed a little reluctant because a little bit maybe laid back in this one because I don't think he wanted to throw too many people under the bus. But Ariel asked the questions and he answered them.
Yeah.
And I know people are out there going, well, there's two sides every story. Every coin has two sides. Yeah, they do. But in this case, I think the side of Punk's is the one you have to lean towards the most because he's got no skin in the game when it comes to that. Why should he lie? There's no reason for him to lie. He's a guy that wants to see that company succeed too. He even said it. He doesn't want to see anything bad. He says I want them to succeed, but they need to fix the problem that they have right now. And in his mind, the problem is there's no leader. There's no boss. There's a guy out there who's trying to be friends with the boys. Yes, God bless him for giving guys a platform to go and work and make some good money and get out there and be exposed on television and let them show what they can do and whatever, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, and not to paint a picture back to the guy that doesn't get talked about very often right now, except for other things, Vince McMahon. He did have some relationship with some of the boys in the back, but he was a boss first. He ran the show. And the other thing they don't have is someone to put, and people say, oh, that's old school thinking. Here there was the old guy rambling on and saying, get off my lawn. Back in the day, we had a locker room leader. And not only that, we had guys who policed the locker room. And all these fans today will say, well, they were just bullies. No, they weren't bullies. They kept straight the locker room, the etiquette and the respect factor that belongs in that locker room. And you don't treat anybody any differently. You don't fluff anybody up. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I want to stop where you're at, kind of, because yes, you did. You had a locker room leader. And we all knew who that was. Yeah. So listening to Punk, he was the locker room leader because they came to him to tell him to stop this from happening, going through the glass, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was above him at that point because he didn't know what to do because you can't make someone not do something. Where the fuck was TK? Why wasn't TK available? Why wasn't TK available to say, I got it, Punk. I'll tell him not to fucking do it. Where was he from this? This is TK's fault that all this happened because of what you just said. He's not a boss. These are his friends. He doesn't want to make anyone mad. He doesn't want to touch any feelings. Fuck feelings. It's your fucking show. If you don't want him going through glass, it's been told by the doctors, it's been told by your agent, it's been told by Punk, and you still want to do it, I'm sorry. Where's your balls?
No, you're absolutely right, Brian. And the fact that Punk even said, I went to him and said, you know, this is what's going on. And he didn't go bother to handle it, so Punk had no choice but to go speak to him. And from all accounts, it was, hey, you know what? The doc told you and you cussed him out and Tony Schiavone went over and talked to you and cussed him out. That's not the way you handle a situation. You don't cuss them out.
Right.
You know, talk about it. Say, this is why I want to do this or whatever the stupid thing you want to do that's going to go viral on the internet for 5 minutes. And then after that, nobody gives a flying fadoo again. I almost said it. It almost came out. I'm getting so amped up here. But, you know, sometimes you got to listen to those guys who know, you know, and like I said before, TK, I've never met him. From all accounts, he's a good guy. He cares, for the talent, but he doesn't know how to command the talent. He lets them do, it's the inmates running the asylum. And for the most part, you got guys like Jericho there who are veterans. Now you've got Adam Copeland, AKA Edge. You've got Christian. You've got some veterans in there that these people should be listening to and even be locker room leaders, but nobody is listening to them. And I've heard this from people. Don't get me wrong. I didn't see it firsthand, but people that I know that I've talked to said, this is what's happening here.
Same here, Jimmy. Same here. Yeah. Same here. And here's another thing. People are trying to place blame. Punk or Jungle Boy. You know what? Go back to the root of all this and where it started. This falls directly on TK. It should have never gotten to this point. Now you're letting the boys handle a situation. Come on, man. They're full of testosterone. They're trying to do the same thing, win the same prize, and you want them to handle the situation. This would never even happen in TNA. It wouldn't happen in TNA. I mean, I'm just being dead serious. And yet everyone's trying to figure out whether Punk's lying. Who gives a fuck? It shouldn't have happened. And it shouldn't have happened. TK could have prevented all this if he just stepped in and said, hey, Jungle Boy, you go through fucking glass and you're out of here. You hear me? One time you go through glass. Well, I want to fuck you. You know what you want to do then? Get on the fucking next flight and get the fuck out of here. Yeah. You know what? But that doesn't happen there. And that's why all these backstage problems are happening. Things, even CM Punk going crazy with that, whatever they call that scruff or whatever the thing is,
going all ball out.
Yeah.
Oh, the scrum, the scrum. Okay. Scrum. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know why he did it? There's no accountability. He knew it. That's what's going on backstage. It is. It's got to be. What else is it?
Yeah, everybody's well, he even said
he even said to and he even said too in that interview. He's like there is no bosses. There is no boss. TK would rather play, you know, real life action figure with all his real life action figures than do anything about it. When you got somebody like Jungle Boy that constantly, and it's just not in AEW, you listen to Busted Open, Bully Ray was saying that he did it at an indie show with him. Right. And I'm like, in what world, in what right mind does, correct me if I'm wrong, this is an outsider's look, you guys know better than anybody, but in what right mind does a talent have to disrespect and not go up and say hello and actually do what you're supposed to do? The unspoken rule, you go up and say hello to everybody, and you get this jamoke that's sitting in the background making sure that his hair looks good, his abs are freaking greased up like a freaking greased pig or whatever. And I'm like, and this got me hot because it's something that I've constantly said here on this show with both of you. You guys don't get the respect that you get in addition to all the guys like, you know, a Bully Ray, a Tommy Dreamer, a Mark Henry. And even Mark Henry is in this freaking locker room. And they're not going to him. They're not going to Dean Malenko, Jerry Lynn.
As much as RJ, as much it does. And as much as I do not like him and think I'd rather piss on him when he was not on fire than on fire, is Johnny Laurinaitis. Okay. At least back then, Jimmy, you will agree. Mm-hmm. When he came to you, you knew you better fucking listen, because the next person that's coming to you is going to be Vince McMahon. And guess what? That's not going to be good.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Where's that guy at in AEW? Where's that guy?
Doesn't exist.
That's mm-hmm. what I'm saying. It's mind boggling to me. And as much as I hate saying it, because I want AEW to be there and I want them to be there for long and strong and forever. It's a business, though. It's not a playground. And it seems like a playground to me, with a bunch of monkey bars and swings and romantic spots to go to in the back. And I just don't get the pecking order, because there is no pecking order. It just seems like it's the boys running the boys, and Tony jumps in when he has to, when there's a
special announcement to be made.
Yeah. I'm really pulling for AEW. I really, really am. I just don't know how long this kind of stuff can continue. If it's truly the way CM Punk is saying it, which I believe.
Yeah, well, that's part of the problem. First, to RJ's point with Jack Perry, I mean, this is a long-standing tradition of respect that we show in this industry, especially when someone like a Bully Ray enters a locker room. He's a Hall of Famer. He's a guy who's been there and done it all. You go out of your way to introduce yourself and say, hey, my name is so-and-so. It's a pleasure to meet you, sir. You know, and, you know, it may sound like some, well, you're trying to blow smoke up his ass. No, you're doing the respectful thing by showing respect to the guys who paved the way for you to be able to do what you want to do. That's what it is. And as far as what Brian was saying about the locker room, you're right. There is no happy medium. At least appoint someone to be the guy in charge.
Yep.
You can go off and be friendly with all the boys and whatever, but have someone be in charge. You know, you talked about TNA, Ryan, and you and a, in or Impact Wrestling, as it was called, and a guy like Scott D'Amore. Scott D'Amore was very approachable and very friendly with the guys, but you also knew he was the boss, but there was a respect factor there. You know what I mean? There's a difference. There's a difference between respecting the checkbook and respecting the guy who respects the talent and wants them to grow and succeed.
So not to give, the guy,
yeah, sorry.
Go, no, no, go, Jimmy. I'm sorry.
No worries at all. I just, the one line that really stuck out to me is that he's more interested in putting matches out there that get a 5-star rating as opposed to filling seats. And that's not what this business is about. And I can't for the life of me, and I hate to go, I know on the business side and stuff like that, there's a lot more to it than just apples and oranges. The money, it just doesn't justify what's going on. You know what I mean? The houses that they're drawing lately, they have diminished. And they don't run house shows or live events at all. Everything is just TV and TV. And you see what the audience, you know how much money production-wise goes into putting on a TV show, Brad?
Right.
You've been there. You've seen it. That is a lot of money. They're not getting return on any of their investments right now. So something has to be done to change that model, business model. You know, and everybody says, well, you want them to be like WWE. No, but take elements of them, stuff that's working, and implement it into your show. Make it your own.
Yep.
So that you can be an alternative product instead of a copycat.
Yep, I agree. And to touch on what I mean for all the listeners, where there's an accountability before it gets to a Scott D'Amore per se, or a Billy Corgan per se, or a Vince McMahon per se. When I was at TNA, if D'Lo Brown or Tommy Dreamer were to come to me and said, hey, you can't do this anymore. This is something you've got to not do. Let me explain it to you. Blah, 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 blah. Guess what? Brian Hebner's not doing it anymore. They're getting that from someone. That's happening for a reason. And that reason is because if D'Lo Brown comes back to me again, it's not going to be good. If Tommy Dreamer comes to me, which he has before, he definitely has, and said, hey, if so-and-so referee does this anymore, we're going to have some issues. We are. You've got to nip this in the bud. Tommy, I've been telling him, well, then you better do something else because it's going to come down. Those are the things I'm talking about that's not there. You know what I mean? It doesn't take a rocket scientist. Mark Henry's a great example. Big Show's a great example. Even though Big Show's just a big heart. So I don't know if he'd be able to do that. And that's a compliment to him, by the way. But Mark Henry, I believe he's rough on the outside and he can say, hey, motherfucker, here's the deal. You go through glass, your ass is gone. Okay. I'm telling you right now, it's easy to find someone. It's easy to find someone like that. I mean, but anyway, and speaking of that, putting asses in seats, I think that someone like TK may have heard CM Punk because there were a lot of talent cuts that happened.
Coincidentally.
Right. And maybe that someone is trying to make this a business now. Maybe they're trying to run a business now because they hired three people that they're paying a ton of money to. And this is also a guy who also said that he would never let talent go and bash WWE for making moves like this. And even saying he promised it would never happen. Guess what? When things happen, this has to happen. You're hiring talent that you're paying money for. There's other talent that aren't drawing you anything, that aren't being used. It's common sense. You have to do this. Everyone hates WB when they do this. It's called business. I'm not happy for this to be happening at all, and I never am. But it's part of the business. And I don't know, like you said, Jimmy, coincidentally, 10 talents get let go after this interview is released. Strange, huh?
Yeah, it's strange how that happens. And it's funny because a lot of stuff you hear from a CM Punk, from others who have departed from there. And one who has been more, I guess, cordial and quiet because he still has friends there is Cody. Cody could tell you, Cody was the guy who helped put them on the map. So what reason does he have to leave there? He had none. He's one of the guys that helped build that company.
Yeah.
But he wasn't happy there. That's the only reason why he left. He was not happy there for what reason? And probably all the reasons that Punk laid out. And like I said before, Brian, you've heard them. I've heard them from people too. There are things that need to be addressed there that are not being addressed, and they need to sooner rather than later.
And I just don't know how you do it. And Jimmy, what a great point. What a great point. Cody was not only the face of that company, but the one that made that place what it is to be today, and he's not there. Why? That's the question. Why is Cody not in AEW and in WWE? Why?
No, because and we talk about thick skin and stuff like that. Look at this. Cody goes over back to WWE, and him and Paul Triple H Levesque make amends for whatever heat there may have been there, speculated heat, with the throne smashing and all that stuff that Cody did when he was in AEW. He understands that the boys are going to be the boys, and they have to take advantage of certain things because in that environment, that worked for him at that time. And as far as the things, toughen up and grow a pair, and take criticism for what it is. It's not meant to tear down. It's to help elevate your product. People are trying to help you by pointing out these certain things, and I know this doesn't tie into to the Punk thing, but I'll give you an example of, I think I told you guys this. I may be wrong, and I don't want to give out who I learned this from because he's a good dear friend, and I don't want to throw him under the bus with the people at AEW. But when the Owen Hart tournament came about, when they had that a little while back,
Yeah.
someone suggested to him, "Hey, Jimmy has a special had a special relationship with Owen Hart, and he was there on that unfortunate day. Why don't we bring him in and have him referee the finals of that tournament? I think that would be a nice touch." And TK said to him, "No, I don't think that would work. He's too critical of our product." That's the reason why. If that's the
Right.
reason why, then I don't want to come in. No, thank you. I would have, I trust me, I would have gone there and done it for free because that's how much I loved and respected Owen. I would have done it for free. And for you to say that, I want to drop an F-bomb so bad right now, it
Do
isn't
it. Do
funny.
it. Just do
No,
it.
no, no. Just for that simple thing that, okay, fuck him. Sorry, I
Timestamp.
had to do it.
No, but that's the thing though, and we've seen that incident, and that's something that you told us. I can't remember if you said that on the air before, Jimmy, but I know you told us that off air when we were recording, and I appreciate you saying that, and of course saying F off to Tony. But anyways, something like Tony, and it's like you guys were in the WWE, obviously TNA, Brian. You have to have a thick skin if you're somebody like a Scott D'Amore, like a Vince McMahon, like a Tony Khan, like an Eric Bischoff. And he is not. It's just like he's trying to have a pissing match, it looks like, with everybody and their mother. And if you don't agree with him, he's gonna take his ball and he's gonna go home. He's gonna take his sack full of quarters or whatever and go home. And it's come on, dude. You're a grown man. And I know you're got, you're in your father's pocket with all the money, but still, come on, dude. You have to have a thick skin with this stuff. And you actually have to, like you said, grow a pair and lay down the law when it needs to be.
Look at the deal with Eric Bischoff when John Alba announced that the one of the podcasts of his is going away because he's got other ventures that he's looking into. He didn't even tag TK in the tweet, and he sought it out and made that had to make that offhanded shot at Eric Bischoff. But Eric tweet mic dropped him anyways. But why? He didn't have to. Why are you searching out this stuff so you can act like a scolded teenager who's hot and just had his phone taken away from him and just got it back and has to like lash out. You know what I mean? It's just stupid.
He needs to stay off the dirt sheets and Twitter and just fucking run a business. And if he's going to stay on the dirt sheets and stay on Twitter, then he ought to take the advice from Vince Russo, Jim Cornette, fucking Eric Bischoff, and figure it out.
Promote your brand instead of taking shots at everybody.
It's horrible. It's horrible.
Hey,
can we
that, but
can we talk about Raw? Can we talk about
let's
Raw?
Do it. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Enough about
so,
him.
So, you know, last this past. This
fuck him. Fuck him.
Fuck him. Fuck him. There you go. There's a next shirt. Anyways, you know, like we said, we're leading up here to WrestleMania this weekend. The go home show for Raw was this past Monday, and you know, ups and downs. I thought it was a decent show, guys, and I really think that it was interesting where they ended off. Jimmy, you know, I listened to your post show there with Justin and Jack as well, Triple J, as you guys are called. I agree with a lot of stuff that you guys said, and I think they really did it just leading into WrestleMania.
I think so too, because I know a lot of people out there are going, we needed to see Cody get his retribution on Monday night. No, it's not quite right for it yet. Let him get beat down because it's old school booking 101. You got to get some heat on the babyface, which they already did the week before. But the more you beat him down, the more sympathy he gets. And yes, Cody showed some fire. He didn't show up in the suit. Then he showed up ready to fight. And he did a good job of that, showed some intensity. But he still got outnumbered. They got beat down, him and Seth Rollins. And of course, Spider, who's killing me every week. But anyway, I think it was
he got whipped too. He got whipped too.
Yeah, at least sell it, Spider. Jeez. Well, anyways, you know, I thought it was the right move because we still got Friday Night SmackDown and we're still going into, you know, night one of WrestleMania. There's a lot of time for Cody to be that guy that we haven't seen yet, to see that rage just building up and building up and building up. And I don't want him to go come out there screaming and yelling and, you know, whatever, and dropping F-bombs like The Rock, because that's Rock's deal. When he does it, it feels special. Nobody else should be dropping them. I want Cody to have that mean, menacing Jake the Snake Roberts look in his face like, you went there? You know what? I don't usually seek revenge, but when I do, even the devil is afraid of me. So watch your ass, or something along those lines. Just, here we go. We're all in.
Yeah, my biggest issue that I've had since the beginning of this storyline has been, and we talked about it briefly, is somebody makes fun of your mother or comes at your, you know, talks about your mother, talks about your wife, talks about your kid. You're going to go at him right then and there. You're going to punch him in the mouth.
Right.
Maybe that was my thing. It was a realistic fact of it, where mm-hmm. you punch them in the mouth when they say something. You don't wait 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. You punch them in the mouth right then. Maybe this is something where it's building up, building up, building up, and then boom, it's just, you see red and you go.
No, I like that, because I would have liked Cody to make an explanation as to why he didn't pop him in the mouth after you talked about his mother, something along the lines of, I know what you guys are trying to do. You're trying to get me off my game. You're trying to make me lose focus on what my goal is here. And that is to finish the story. And let me tell you this. I'm saying restrained right now. And don't confuse this for weakness. Because I will come after you for talking about my mother. But first things first, I have to honor my father by coming back and winning that Universal Championship. Something along those lines. I mean, not word for word, but you know where I'm going with this.
Right.
Something I think is kind of sneaky. Yeah. Something I think is kind of sneaky, though, guys, that we're not paying attention to is this Money in the Bank cash in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have a feeling something is going to be, I don't know. Right now, it's set up that Cody's going to win 100%, right or wrong.
But I think the cash in, though, is. My bet is, like, I think a lot of people is you're going to go towards Seth and Drew, because I think they're going to be setting up as that as the quote unquote easier title to win because of them being hobbled. Right. But I think it's also good, and we've said this multiple times over the last couple of weeks, is it this is a good problem to have if you're the WWE, where you have option A, option B, option C, option D. And Jimmy, you got the pencil in your hand. The best part
course.
about it is the eraser.
Yep, exactly. Card is always subject to change, and so is whoever's going over it, because that could change on that same day.
Yeah.
And it has happened before. Not public enemy kind of way where you in gorilla and you go, we're not going through the table and or anything like that. But there's a way, Bri, in my opinion, this is again my opinion, to implement that money in the bank cash in without it actually happening, so that we can take Damian Priest out of the equation, where you have a match. If you got a second for me to just ramble on about this crap, where you have the match with Drew and Seth, and get to a point where Drew's been working over Seth's knee so bad, because that's a target, the knee in the back, the knee in the back, the knee in the back. Tell that story where he's going after it. Seth just fires up and lays a beating on Drew where they're both laid out, like maybe a curb stomp, like, and he sells that knee after the curb stomp, because that's the curb stomp leg, right? And so he's down. Drew is down. Drew's out because of the curb stomp, because that's the finish that nobody should kick out of. But that's a different story. So he's down. Seth is down. Here comes Damian Priest with the cash in. He actually hands it in and to cash it in. And ladies and gentlemen, Damian Priest is cashing in his money in the bank briefcase. This is officially now a three-way match. And as he slides right into the ring, Drew manages to get up enough energy to hit him one time with that curb stomp and go back and sell that knee. And as he sells up, here comes the Claymore. Bang. Drew wins. And of course, because the attention was taken away and someone inadvertently helped him, like they've been doing in the past, like with Elimination Chamber and stuff like that, Drew is your new world champion. He's already tried to cash in. The case is off him, and he can go in a different direction now and not worry about that.
I mean, yeah, it all sounds good. And I mean, it does. And, honestly, I thought Raw was pretty strong in the beginning, the end, but not so much in the middle. For me, I thought that there was, a lull. I didn't think it rolled on, but it doesn't agree with what I'm about to say, because Raw went up against some really tough competition. And a lot of people may laugh, but they went up against the Iowa State LSU women's basketball game. All right. And people are going, women's basketball? Okay. Well, this game featured Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. And that was a battle from last year's national championship. That number was amazing. 12.3 million viewers. And in that coveted number that everyone wants, likes, is 18 to 49, did a 3.03.
Wow.
Okay.
That's huge.
It is. But Raw managed to beat last week's with 1.72 million. And in their coveted,
Demo.
I believe it was a 5.6, I think. I may be wrong. Five something. I know that for sure, which is huge. That's a huge number as well. But you could tell by what I'm saying that people felt the same way, because in hour one, they had 1.948 million. Hour two, they had 1.760. Hour three, they had 1.643. All of them in the top 10. Okay, so that's really good. But you could see the surge of what I'm saying. So I thought it was a good show. I mean, don't get me wrong. I thought it was a good show. I just thought that there could have been more in the middle, towards this WrestleMania, build up.
No, I feel you, Brian. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that at the opening segment, when they had Rock and the Bloodline in the ring, and Seth came in through the crowd and he challenged Rock, you heard that place. They went nuts.
Yes.
And then, or maybe Roman Reigns, if you got a pair, you want to challenge me, I'll fight you tonight too. And the place went nuts again. Then all of a sudden, Solo stepped up, and it almost like, okay, suck the air out of the building.
Yes.
If Solo had been built up to this point where he looked like a world beater instead of taking all the losses that he has recently, maybe you could have gotten a better reaction. But you felt it. It was like,
Yeah.
I still wanted to see, you know, it was almost like an April Fool joke.
Right. But overall, I thought it was a good show. I did. And it did a lot of business for WrestleMania. Just it wasn't as good as I anticipated, if that makes any sense.
No, I hear you. I hear
So before we bring in Wildcat Chris Harris, I wanted to get your guys' predictions. We're not going to go through the whole card. We're only going to go over the important ones because obviously something that is predicate on this show is the main events of night one and night two of WrestleMania. Jimmy, we'll go to you first. Night one, who wins? Night two, who wins in the main
See,
events?
I'm almost conflicted about night one because obviously everybody's predicting a Rock and Roman victory here, and we get a Bloodlines rules match on Sunday. But because we had that Bloodlines rules match on Monday, it almost makes me think maybe since we gave it to him, we're not going to give it to him on Sunday. And maybe the babyfaces go over in some form or fashion, whether it's Cody pinning the Rock, whatever the case may be. But either way, I think when you get to night two, Cody has to beat Roman by himself without any outside help. So if it is a Bloodlines rules match, like again, me and my fantasy pencil and my fantasy booking hat on, I'm thinking, you know, we talk about surprises going into who's going to be there and who's going to be a surprise entrant into something. You know, start the match before it even begins, before we have the opening bell. Have maybe Rock and the Bloodline walk down to ringside and tease, you know, oh, we know they were going to interfere, but come on, right off the get-go, you know, that sort of thing. And then all of a sudden you have the music play, time to play the game. And Hunter comes out, walks on the stage, looks down at Rock because they've already teased that tension between him. You know, you're on the board of TKO and Hunter saying a couple of weeks ago, you're the boss, but not the boss around here. I am. Something along those lines. So you tease that tension there, and we don't know what the physical limitations are for Hunter right now with his issue. So what if he were to step to the side, point to the entryway, and you hear, you can't see me? Here comes John Cena, who's had a pass with The Rock. All of a sudden, he points again. The glass breaks. Who else? We saw they headlined three WrestleManias together, Rock and Stone Cold. He comes out. If the stars can align in some way, make this happen, Dustin comes out. I wish I, oh my goodness. Then those three go to ringside. They eliminate the Bloodline, Rock and the Bloodline from the equation, take them out of the picture, and have that entire match be Rock, I mean, Cody and Roman. And that's it. And Cody finishes the story there. And then who knows? On Monday night, they celebrate, you know, all the, and Cody could have a Cody concert, as I like to call it, or Corderas karaoke, as I did on Monday night, where I'm a big 70s guy. So why not sing a little 70s tune, little karaoke? One rock feeds the fire. Roman Reigns lost his title. Cody's champ, so who's crying now?
Somebody please isolate that and email that to me ASAP because that is going to be our new open.
It's not.
But
Hey,
yeah,
like
you
I
get
said,
Brian. You
I have SiriusXM for two reasons. Busted open in 70s on 7. That's it. I drive my wife crazy walking around the house singing all these songs.
Well, it's paid for it in tenfold then, Jimmy. Brian, you know, you've been on the mountain as far as Roman retaining since day one, pretty much. Is your mind being swayed the other way now?
But I'm scared. I'm scared because too many things are making it obvious. I wish there was a wrench in there somewhere that I could put another screw or something, but that I just feel like it's built to the Hogan record so much that it can't happen. It can't happen. I don't want to see the story happen. I don't fuck his story. I don't want to see it happen. And you could get mileage out of it. And I know we've gone back and forth and battled this thing and battled and battled and battled it. Here's where I see it. Night one, Jimmy, not to disagree to disagree, but Rock and Roman are going over. We're going to have a Bloodlines thing. I think then we're going to be introduced with the stuff that you said. I think we're going to have these twists and turns, these puzzle pieces, all this fucked up shit layered that's cool as fuck that only WWE can do to take these Bloodline leaders out. And then it's going to end up being Cody and them. And then I think there's a swerve somewhere where Cody doesn't finish it, but it's, I don't know, man. I don't want to give it my program. I don't want to give it my program, and I want to be on Busted Open, damn it. And so I'm just saying, that's why I feel the way I feel.
No, but I feel you, Brian. And look, we could respectfully disagree here. My only concern is if Cody doesn't, quote unquote, finish the story at WrestleMania, which is the biggest platform he could do it on. You know, they give the baseball analogy. You get three strikes in baseball. And I, you know, if this is strike two, I don't know if people will wait around to see if strike three happens. I'm worried that a lot of people will jump off the Cody train.
And Jimmy,
that's my only thing.
No, I get with that. I get that. And that's another strong reason why I'm scared. That's another, because I believe that 100%. So there has to be a finish that somehow convinces everyone to be angry and want it more than what they want it now. I get that.
Yeah.
But there's, so they just erase all this shit for him chasing Hogan's record. They don't let him do it in Madison Square Garden where his dad couldn't do it. I don't know, man. There's just so many layers that they could continue to do. Once again, put that pencil up. Put that pencil up, Jimmy. Put that pencil up.
The pencil is here.
Yes, it's got an eraser.
It's got an eraser on there.
We can erase some shit. Damn it. God damn it.
Damn it, pal. It's good shit.
No, trust me, I was on board with that as well, the Madison Square Garden deal, and they could have had a special Saturday night's main event for it, which we haven't seen in ages, and you get a big platform on free TV as opposed to a PLE or whatever they call them now, pay-per-view. We still have pay-per-views in Canada here, unfortunately, so you got to get the network.
Well, because they don't want to make you mad, Jimmy, that's why, because F them. But I'll say this, and then we'll get over to our great guest, Mr. Chris Harris. But the good thing about this, gentleman, is we haven't been able to say this for a very, very long time with WWE. There's so many different options. There's so many different avenues that this could go. My biggest thing is if something happens, then what? Then what's going to happen? It's a whole Tommy Dreamer thing. He's been saying I'm Busted Open since day one. If Cody loses, then what? If Roman wins, then what? You have to think of that long term. But tune in this weekend.
Hey, real quick.
On Saturday and Sunday. I'm sorry.
RJ, real quick. Hey, I know we got to bring Chris Harrison, and I can't wait. What does happen if Roman loses? What happens to him? Is it now him and Rob? Is it now where's he go?
I think if we see Roman lose, I think there'll be some sort of seed planted. My idea is we were going to see a Rock Roman. I will say that we're going to see, if that's the avenue, is we will see.
RJ, that means shut the fuck up.
No. I think, believe it or not, this is, again, my fantasy brain working overtime again. And sorry to keep Chris Harris waiting, but it's an easy fix. If Roman loses, all Rock has to do is focus his attention. Now, you let the family down. You let the bloodline down. You let the family tree down. You let our ancestors down. Everybody who built this. But just go on that tirade and drop the F-bombs on Roman for being the guy to drop the ball. And then have Roman take him out, and maybe you just created a new baby face.
It's a muddle. Roman. It's just a muddle mess. Let's God, get us out of here, RJ. Yeah.
Let's go up to our second count after we hear from a sponsor and bring in Mr. Chris Harris. This episode is sponsored by Blue Chew. Let's talk about sex, guys. Shouldn't you always be at your best? Make 2024 the year to maximize your performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra, Cialis, and Levitra, but in chewable tablets and at a fraction of the cost. You can take them anytime, day or night, so you can plan ahead or be ready whenever an opportunity arises. The process is simple. Sign up at BlueChew.com. consult with one of their licensed medical providers, and once you're approved, you'll be able to receive your prescription within days. And the best part, guys, it's all done online. So no visits to the doctor's office, no awkward conversations, and no waiting in line at the pharmacy. Blue Chew tablets are made in the USA and prepared and shipped directly to your door in a discreet package. With Blue Chew, men everywhere are excited to see the postman, because when your package has arrived, your package has arrived. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Try Blue Chew free when you use the promo code REFIN at checkout. Just pay $5 for shipping. That's BlueChew.com, promo code REFIN, R-E-F-I-N, to receive your first month free. Just pay $5 shipping. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring our show today. Chew it and do it.
This is your two count.
Welcome back to our second count. I am honored to welcome in 7-time TNA Tag Team Champion, the one, the only Wildcat, Chris Harris. Chris, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you, RJ. It's great to be here with you guys. I've been looking forward to this.
Hello, Chris Harris. This is your good drinking buddy, Brian Hebner. And
hey, baby Heb.
How are you, bud?
I'm good, man. It's good to see you.
You too. We've been working on this for weeks, and I'm so glad we got to it, man. And just a privilege to have you on the show.
I'm honored to be on the show, man. I'm a weekly listener. I love your all's takes on everything. So, yeah, when I got the call from you, man, I really appreciate it. I'm honored.
You know, well, we're honored to have you on, and that comes from the heart. And thank you for joining us. And I'm very surprised, really not, that you are a drinking buddy of Brian's. But anyway, so Brian seems to be drinking buddies with a lot of people.
Yeah, I think I'm just in line for that. He's got plenty of drinking buddies.
We've never had a beer together. Stop it. Kayfabe, brother.
Yeah, it's probably whiskey or gin or...
No, JD, vodka. Brother. It's got to be JD.
That's right.
That's right. That's right. Jimmy, it's a pleasure to be able to sit down with you too, man. I really respect your work and I've watched you for years. So it's a real pleasure.
Well, I appreciate that very much. That means a lot to me. It really does.
Brian, so, you too.
appreciate it.
Yeah, right. Okay. So Chris, I've always been a fan, and I told this to Brian too, been a big fan of what you're doing with America's Most Wanted there. And I really think that in that time frame, you're there with TNA, part of America's Most Wanted, that time frame there of tag team wrestling, I don't think really gets their just due with there with TNA. You know, you had yourself, you had Motor City Machine Guns, you had Team 3D, you had all these great tag teams. When are we going to see a resurgence of those types of tag teams coming soon? Or do you think it's just a matter of, hey, they're just going to, you know, throw darts?
Man, I would love to see that. I look for that in all the companies. I always love to take a look at their tag team division and see where they're going. And a lot of times I feel like sometimes you don't really know that until you get some longevity out of some teams. And you really start seeing how they work together and just the chemistry and things like that. But yeah, when Storm and I were together, we first got together in 2002 when the company started. And I always tell people, I mean, if you look at what tag teams were around then, because Storm and I, when we were put together, we thought that, okay, that's our shot. That's what we're, that's what we've been given. So let's make this work. Let's not just go out there and just run the play. Let's, if we're going to be a tag team and they want us to make this work, let's be the best tag team we can. So, and him and I just kind of looked at how we came up, and we looked at the tag teams that we watched coming up and just took a little piece from everything. So it was a lot of that old school wrestling. And so that's what we did. We went out there and worked as a tag team. And back in 02, 03, if you look at some of the, really all there was WWE at the time, but they just weren't focusing on tag teams right then. Their tag team division was mostly consistent of two singles wrestlers that they just kind of threw together. They give them a short run, maybe with the titles. And next thing you know, they're split up and within 6 months and feuding. And so when we got on there and started doing our tag team thing, it was like it was a whole new thing for people because they weren't used to that. They hadn't seen it in a couple of years. So it just kind of took, you know, it got their attention. So I would love for something like that to come up now. I think, you know, there's definitely some solid teams out there. Yeah, it's just a matter of I'd love to see that if it ever happened again.
Now, just really quickly here, because you talk about the America's Most Wanted and that era in TNA, that the tag team division was really deep and there was a lot of good tag teams there. Do you feel that yourself and James Storm were a little bit, I hate to put it this way, underrated and underappreciated for your contributions? Because that you guys, as well as all the other teams in there, were really, really good and entertaining. And I love the fact that, like you said, you guys were like old school. I hate to be that guy that sounds like he's saying, screaming, get off my lawn to the new generation. But you guys were doing it, for lack of a better term, you were doing it right.
Yeah, I felt like we were. And I think we were getting the right attention. We just kind of came out of nowhere. And people were like, man, it's kind of like, I mean, the best reference I could do nowadays is FTR. It's like, they're mm-hmm. kind of going out there and they've been a real tag team for these years. And they kind of work old school. And of course they adapt to the style of their opponents as well. But I think that's why they've gotten so much attention and why a lot of people consider them the best tag team around, because they're going out there and they're treating it like a tag team match. And that's what Storm and I did. We went out there and we worked with some great teams, no doubt about it. But I just think that we kind of got the right attention at the time. As far as being underrated, I guess I didn't feel like that at the time because I was just taking this ride and I was enjoying it. And the attention we were getting so early on, I was just so appreciative of it. But as years go on and, you know, the longer you get, the more fans forget. And I get how that is. The only thing I wish, like when I look back, we were together 06 to about 06, 07. Or I'm sorry, 02 to 06, 07. And each year, obviously, TNA progressed. And, you know, we got more eyes on the product. And even after we were split, it just kept going and going. There's a lot of fans out there, you know, whether it's, you know, some appearances or signings, conventions. When I'm with Storm, he still gets a lot of attention with that beer money. And a lot of people think, oh my God, does that bother him? And it doesn't, because I get it. Beer money came right after America's Most Wanted, and they had more viewers as they were doing that. So more eyes saw beer money, and obviously it was more recent. So, you know, it's just the more eyes that got on it, you know, that the bigger the company got, the bigger the teams got. So it was kind of like America's Most Wanted was up in that first 5 year mark that people remember. But, you know, it's still really cool that when people do remember and they, or even if they go back and start watching and appreciate it all over again, it's really cool. So, yeah, I guess to some, maybe we're underrated. You know, but it's just, I guess, because it's been so long and you know, they compare us to other teams going on, you know, with Bear Money and that. But, you know, there was just more eyes on the product then. You know, we were still growing at the time America's Most Wanted was out there.
Hey, Chris, you had a few chances at the World Wrestling Headquarters, did some stuff up there. What was your experience up there? Like, how was that like for you? Can you kind of break that down before you made your way to the TNA?
Before TNA, or are you talking about after TNA?
No, before TNA.
The WWE?
Yes, sir. Without leaving me off.
Well, all I really did before that was I had a couple matches in 96, but that was just kind of enhancement matches. So I was just in and out a couple days. So those experiences were good because I was so new. I started in 94 and You know, here I'm on WWE TV in 96. Had a match with Bradshaw and Farooq, ironically, before they were a tag team. So it was, yeah, great experience. And it was kind of cool to, you know, see how things work. And, you know, as a fan, that was, you know, that's where we always strive to be. So I guess at that point it was fine. I mean, I was just kind of in and out and there to do a job. And that's what I did.
How was that, by the way, working with Bradshaw and Farooq?
I mean, those guys will give it. Yeah, there's no doubt. But, you know, I didn't feel like they took advantage of me or anything. I mean, that's what I was there to do. They were supposed to lay it in and they were supposed to look good. And that's what we did. But they were both cool. And I've talked to Ron about it several times since. I see him once in a while. And so that's kind of cool. But it was all good, man. Good experience.
Was that during the time of John's clothesline from hell?
Yes, it was.
because maybe I don't like to peel back the curtain too much, but at the same time, that thing looks like it takes people's heads off. But, you know, at the same time, it takes two to make it look that way. And a lot of people who don't understand think that he took liberties. And I don't think he did, because I've been there and I've seen it. And you obviously, as referees, we check on the guys to make sure you're okay after taking it. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much I really played a part in this one, because he was coming whether I was bumping or not. I was going down. I don't, as far as taking liberties, I mean, this is when he was still Justin Hawk Bradshaw. So
damn,
he was still kind of making his name as well. So I don't know how much of a let's call it a bully. You know, I don't know how much of a bully he was really wanting to be back then. But no, it was stiff. It was tight. I get that. And, you know, especially for the finisher has to look exactly what it's like. And, so I knew it was coming. Actually, that he hit me with a boot right before the clothesline. So the boot it did what it was supposed to do. It was a good setup, because that knocked me silly. And then next thing I know, that clothesline's coming. So, but yeah, it was all good, man. All good.
At least he didn't hit you. I have to do this once an episode. At least he didn't hit you with a twisting, burning 450 hammer Phoenix splash and have you kick out of it.
You know, he asked me about that. He said that was what he was going to use that day. And I actually had to, you know, pull my vet card and say, no, I can't do that.
At least you didn't get the same treatment as Public Enemy. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I'm glad of that. Yeah.
Hey, Chris, also, this is kind of interesting. Read through show notes. You know, you were brought in 2002, as you already said, but you were given a tryout match. Your tryout match was against James Storm.
Yeah.
not only that, but then you both were signed to short-term contracts. And then Bob Ryder, who was behind this, who, God bless him, kind of was his creative idea to force you guys together. And then you can, Storm, I believe, was the one that came up with the America's Most Wanted gimmick. Explain that process, man. That's crazy. They bring you both in to have a tryout match against each other. You're both trying to do things on your own. And all of a sudden they go, oh, you know what? Let's put these two fuckers together. Fuck it. Let's see how this works. I mean, that's crazy.
No, that's kind of how it happened, man. You know, this was all based out of Nashville. I was working down in Nashville a lot. Storm's from there. We worked a lot of indies together. We were working for Burt Prentice. He was the promoter down there.
Now, when you were working indies, were y'all working together or just working indies together on the same show?
Same show, but we worked a lot against each other as well. So we had some history working against each other, and we had good chemistry with that too. But Bert was putting together a big show, one of his big shows in the Nashville Fairgrounds, which is where TNA started. That's where that's the asylum. And Bert was putting together his show, and Jeff Jarrett and Jerry, they all wanted to come in and kind of do a trial run at that show. Like I know they had the commentators setting up. I know that was they gave Don West a opportunity there. I think they brought him in to see how he was going to do, and so they were testing that out. Some of the writers were there. I just, you know, there was a lot of people running around, but Bert put Storm and I against each other on that show. And it was kind of like just that was his big buildup. He had been building it on his TV show. So as far as Nashville goes, it was a big match coming to, and there was a lot of build behind it. So Storm and I went out there, and we knew that everybody was around. It was never labeled as a tryout match, but of course everybody was going to be peeking at the matches and taking a look at talent. And so Storm and I just, we told each other, we said, let's go out there. And I mean, let's kick some ass, man. Cause you never know who's going to be watching this. And so that's what we did. And I mean, it's still to this day, one of my favorite matches that I've ever had. Storm and I just went out there and everything clicked. And we really had a good one. Don West, he did. I know he was working on his commentary during that match because he has told me, and I think he said it publicly, that was the match that really, that's what did it for him. He was like, I'm in this, if this is the kind of stuff we're going to see. So,
wow.
But when we came back, I'd known Jeff from WCW, and I remember peeking over at Jeff. He was standing in the corner, and he looked at me, he gave me a wink, and he said, we'll be in touch. And I was like, man, that's all right. So I knew they watched it. I knew that they saw it. And yeah, within a few weeks, Bob Ryder was letting Storm and I know that they were going to sign us to those short-term contracts. And they brought us in, and we were on the first show. And I think the way it happened, man, is probably the way it happens with a lot of people. They knew they wanted to do something with us. They just didn't know what, and it was a brand new company. So of course you got to focus on your stars, because they're what is going to attract the eyes in. And then you want to build your new stars as well. But there was just, they had the attention else, so many different places that I don't think they knew they wanted us. They just didn't know what the hell to do with us. And so, I guess it was Bob that, we can't have a great friendship with Bob, throughout the years. And, I guess Bob mentioned to him that, why don't you just put them together? And so, like it happens with a lot of guys, we got thrown together and say, well, hell, we don't know what we're doing singles, so throw them together as tag team, see what works. And that's what I was saying before. We were like, man, if this is what we've been given, we're going to make the best out of it. Forget the singles action that we thought we were going to be big single stars. Let's dive into this tag team, man. And from week one, we were like, let's do this. And so that's kind of how it happened. And yeah, we just started adding to it. The matching outfits, and Storm came up with America's Most Wanted. And actually Mike Tenay came up with our finishing move, the death sentence. I mean, it was just a little bit, nice. Little pieces here and there. And a little funny note though about the America's Most Wanted. So Storm came up with that. And of course, right away, you start worrying about the copyrights and things like that from the TV show. And so right away it was kind of shut down. I don't remember who, maybe Jeff, I'm not sure, but the name was kind of shut down. But it was, I mean, like, I love that name. I just thought that was a badass name for what we were doing. And so little by little, man, like I think one of the first things we did, we had AMW put on our gear and just went out, and without it actually being called that, we just started working our matches like that. And we had Jeremy Borash was in on it. Mike Tenay was in on it. And little by little, like, Tenay would start to throw in little tidbits of America's Most Wanted on commentary, just kind of throwing it in. Mm. And so that started to catch a little bit. Well, Jeremy Borash was doing the ring announcing at that time. And we were just, we were being announced as just Harrison Storm. So eventually, after it started catching on, Borash just announced us as America's Most Wanted. And so it just kind of boomed from there. And next thing, nobody really put a stop to it. And so we just took off with it, man. And, nothing's ever been said since. And it's just kind of run with it. So grace of God, man, we stuck, got to stick with it. And it became a thing.
I wonder if they're copyrighted, America's Most Wanted, the show.
You would think. I mean, I never even really tried because I thought, well, that'd be that's a dumb thing to do. Of course they're copyrighted. I've never even tried, man. Maybe I should.
Yeah, absolutely.
You never know. And what I love about that story is the collaboration and all the people working together to help come up with that name and that idea and how to present them and that sort of thing. And you guys had chemistry right from the go. And like you said, you guys have worked together a long time. And you mentioned before how sometimes they just like to throw people out there and eventually split them up, and they kind of tease that with you guys for a little bit. Tell us what the thought process was behind it and why it didn't happen.
Yeah, so yeah, I'd say within that year, you know, things were catching on, and we were having great matches, and let's go right on who's in charge here. And it was Vince Russo that was writing it. I will go on record. I love Vince. I'm a Vince guy. I think he has some great ideas. Of course, he has some awful ones as well. You know, we all do. But I just know that Vince was that kind of a writer. He likes to, you know, hotshot a lot of things. And, you know, if something's working, if something's going, he's like, you know, well, great. Then, you know, let's split them up and let's have them feud. And the only thing is, you don't think about what happens after that, and when you can kind of get lost in the shuffle. So, we had some dissension on TV, and it was kind of leading to a break. It really was. And up until that point, Storm and I, you know, we were doing what we were taught, you know, we were doing what we were told, and we kept our mouth shut. And, you know, we weren't going to be we didn't want to be a problem with anything, didn't want to have any arguments. So we kind of went with the flow for a long time. But man, we really started getting our heart into this, and we felt like we could really make something work. And there was a whole lot of life left in America's Most Wanted. So that was probably the first time where we really went to you know, it was Vince and Jeff and probably Jerry, and just said, look, we really want to take a run with this if we can keep going. And they wound up keeping us. I don't know what the conversations were like behind closed doors, but maybe they could have said, you know, these prima donna pricks, they, you know, not wanting to go with the plan. You know, I don't know, but no, they went with it. So on TV, the story just kind of directed itself to where, you know, we had some dissension, but then we were back together, and then kept it running for years more.
How did y'all get out of that, by the way? Because like, you were attacked and assaulted by Storm with a bottle.
That one was when we did split.
Oh, so you were saying they're doing this previous before this?
Yeah, they did this about a year into our team, like 03, 04. I mean, they were teasing stuff, and we didn't actually split till the very end of 06.
Wow.
You hit me with a beer bottle. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were trying to do this for a while then.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was back and forth, but, but when it actually happened, we kind of were all like, okay, you know, let's see where this goes. But the times they had brought it up in the past, we tried to, you know, try to go against it to where it's like, you know, hey man, this is going somewhere. And, you know, if we'd have split within a year or two, I mean, we would have never been, you know, never done the kind of things that we were known for, and you know, why people remember now. It would have just been here and gone. So, yeah, we were ready to really make a name for ourselves.
You know, Chris, for a lot of the times, you know, great tag teams have that third person with you, your manager, valet, whatever it may be. Having Gail Kim be a part of America's Most Wanted there, legitimately one of the best, if not the best, women's wrestlers in TNA history, in my opinion. Working with her, having her with you guys coming out, just working with her mentality, did she have a lot of, you know, was she like giving you guys ideas on how to do certain things, or was it just kind of you guys there?
Well, no, I'm definitely biased. I think Gail is probably the best female wrestler out there. I remember at the beginning when this was all put together, this was the heel turn for America's Most Wanted. We had been baby faces for a few years already, and this was kind of talked about a heel run, and we were on board with it. We were like, yeah, let's see where this goes. And so then we were paired with Jeff, we were paired with Gail. And I think at first we were, we were ready to try anything, but you know, I don't know if we were thinking, yeah, does this fit or not, but I'll tell you what, man, right from the get-go, when she started going out with us, it was, it,
it was almost like we didn't know how much more she added to America's Most Wanted until it actually happened. Like she became a real part of us, as far as a heel group. Yeah, we went out there, and I mean, just having her as that third part in the match, I mean, it just added so much to the matches. So yeah, I mean, and she could do anything. She was there for everything. You know, when we would get what we were doing for the day, I would always make time to go and set her down and let her know what was going on, because you know she has that mind for the business. So I was letting her know, you know, it's like the psychology of what we're trying to get out of the match and which direction we're going, and she would kind of give her input, and especially, you know, the times that she was involved, we would just always collaborate and try to make sense out of any situation. So yeah, she was awesome to have around. And yeah, such a great mind for the business. We have we think a lot alike when it comes to things like that. So yeah, she was great to have with us, and yeah, it was awesome.
That's great. Another a fellow Canadian, by the way. I have to give you credit to, you know.
I knew you were Jimmy. I knew you were going there.
You know, I have to go there.
I knew it.
And you know, because up here in Canada, we have to announce the city, the province, and also the country when you're announced, just like Bret Hart. It's Calgary, Alberta, Canada. So.
Good Lord.
It has to be done that way, because anyway, I digress. But
she's a Toronto girl.
Yes, she is. Yes, she is. God bless her. She's awesome. She is awesome. And you guys, like you said, move from babyface to heel, that transitioning to heel. How does that affect your mindset going into a match? Because, you know, obviously as babyfaces, there's a certain way you connect with the audience, and now you have to connect with them in a different way to get that heat. So what was that mindset kind of making that shift?
Yeah. I mean, from the start, America's Most Wanted, we were over with the fans. They loved us. Every team that we would face, they were in support of us. So yeah, we had a lot going for us. So just like it's said in wrestling, you know, sometimes the best baby faces make the best heels. And there's no doubt that Storm and I definitely had that heel instinct in both of us. So it was just a matter of having the option and the presentation to open that up. So yeah, I mean, turning and Jeff was so hated, probably in and out of the locker room. Jeff Jarrett was so hated. So to be aligned with him, you know, that right there, that solidified it. And you know, we started coming out, and that's when I started coming out in suits, and you know, Gail was with us. So it was just a whole different change. And yeah, it's kind of it's a mindset. You have to completely flip it, and or, you know, you're making the fans happy and exciting them. You know, we're out there to be heels, and we were that team that were going out there, and we didn't mind being hated. In fact, we encouraged it. So we weren't out there trying to be the cool heels anymore, and so we just went out there and yeah, I mean, we were in fans' faces. We were, I mean, doing anything to really get them to hate us. And they did. I mean, we had, I mean, some of the, you know, not maybe not TV, but some of the house shows, things like that, you know, there was, I mean, they were coming after us. So, yeah, it was fun, man. But yeah, you completely have to, I mean, completely change your mindset on something like that, because, you know, you can't just go out there and, I mean, there's just too many that are out there now wanting to be the, you know, they're a heel, but they want to go out there and be. I'm just, that's why I feel like I fit in with you guys. I'm just so old school. It's like, I want to, if I'm a heel, man, I want you to hate me. I mean, I mean, hell, Brian, I think you remember me. I would get pussycat chants going.
Yeah.
And I loved it. The louder it was, the better it was. So, you know, when they were chanting pussycat, I was like, you know, damn, I'll take it. You know, I'm doing something right.
No, I love hearing that, because that was going to be my follow-up, because you mentioned the cool heels, and that's what we seem to see a lot today is, like you said, people looking for that momentary gratification. It's everybody's in that fast and furious world where, hey, so-called Steve Austin was a cool heel. Maybe I could be that. I could hate you. And that's what heels do. It's wrestling 101.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I watch it now, and I mean, if we can't figure it out, then there's something wrong. I mean,
if somebody's out there doing something, and I'm like, are they the heel or the baby face? You know, which is it? And then, you know, you might get your answer that week, and then the next week, they're acting in a different. I mean, I don't know. It's just so backwards now. So yeah, I mean, I one week somebody's a heel, next week they're a baby face, and yeah, just a lot of it doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I'll say this. I think, and you have to tell me, because this is a question to you, your feud with LAX was pretty big, I think. Was there one bigger that you can name, or is this the one?
Oh, I'd say feud-wise was probably 3D. I think we probably had a bigger feud with them. The LAX thing really didn't. It really didn't catch on because we started going with LAX for us to turn back babyface. I don't know if this makes sense. So we had our heel run, and then we actually had an 8-man with LAX where we were all four on the same side, and they wound up laying us out. And the thing was, they start coming after us, and you know, we may have turned against the fans, but we never turned against America, United States of America. So it was kind of like we were standing up for that. And so once you start supporting the flag and supporting that, the fans were kind of gearing towards supporting us again. And then so we had a little feud with them like that. And then I think it ended with one of our – I think we had a flag match. They won that, and that started teasing. The reason I say it didn't go long is because – as we were turning back babyface, that's when Storm turned on me.
Interesting.
So then that made me full-fledged babyface, and he went heel. So the whole LAX feud never really had a finish to it because we kind of took off with Storm and I. So I would say if I had a hotter feud, I mean, probably the more well-known would be the Dudleys 3D. But we had some good ones with Triple X, the Naturals. Some really heated feuds that, you know, just maybe like kind of just what I was saying before, just, you know, because a lot of it was in the early days that maybe a lot of people don't remember.
Yeah.
Remember it, but about I think 3D came around 05, 06. So, you know, we were getting more eyes on the product. And so I think probably our hottest feud was with them.
Wow. Gotcha.
You mentioned earlier a team, like a current tag team, like FTR, who I think are fantastic. I really do, because they, like you said, they bring out that old school philosophy in their tag team matches. Do you think that's something that's getting lost on a lot of the younger generation of talent out there right now, especially during tag team matches? Because I know people seem to think that Brian and I pick on AEW a little too much. But at the same time, when we watch tag team matches there, it's almost like we say, hey, why don't you just make every one of them a Texas Tornado match? Because, you know.
Oh, yeah. God, where do I start? Yeah. Yeah. they really have. I mean, it's, you know,
it's tough.
I don't want to pick on AEW either. It just happens because I'm an AEW fan. I want them to succeed. I watch every week, and I want to see something great. You know, I'm still a wrestling fan. So when I turn it on, you know, I'm geared into it. I'm like, cool. You know, what are we going to see tonight? And I'd say within minutes, first 5 minutes, you know, my wife, I just started complaining about something because it's like, you know, God, that makes no sense. Why are they doing that? And, you know, my wife was always like, you know, why do you even watch this? It just pisses you off every week. Yeah, it's just, I mean, the whole tag team art is lost. Let's start with the rules. I mean, and who better than you guys to pick up on that? I mean, why do you even have a referee in there? You know, he's not, I mean, they don't have him enforcing any of the rules. You're right. It's everyone's a tornado match. Everyone must be a no count out match because they're outside the ring for minutes. I mean, yeah, there's just, you know, you can't have a full tag team match with the art of wrestling.
It's hard to do
without the rules. I mean, there's just so much surrounding that. And, you know, and I always look at it. I know Brian, you're big on it. You always say, you know, I, I'm, I'm not even in the match, and I, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm not the star, and I'm not part of it. But I always say, I mean, that the referee is like the fifth man in the match. Fifth participant in the match, because I just feel like, the ref can be used for spots. Ref can be used for communication. The ref can be used for so much.
They can.
You know, if a match starts to fall apart, a lot of times the ref can get it back on track. So yeah, the ref is just needed so much, especially in tag team wrestling. And I don't think the guys nowadays, not only is the art being lost, but I don't think they're picking up on how much they could really do in this match. I always say a tag team match can be as twice as exciting as a singles match. You got twice as many guys out there. There's so much more you can do, and you can use the referee more than you can in a singles match.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, when you got your partners involved and anything behind the ref's back, and yeah, it's just, there's just so much that it's almost like they don't know what they don't know, but yet they have people like you guys telling them every week and they still don't want to listen. So, you know, I just don't think they're taking advantage of what's right in front of them. And I think that's a lot of what, you know, FTR does. I think they do try to use that to their advantage. And, you know, they have to work with the other team. I know they try to, you know, adapt to each style, but that's just what I see those guys doing. And that's why I like their matches so much better, because I'm a tag team guy, and that's I see the ability that the art that they're doing out there just makes so much more sense to me.
Right. We're in the age of get your shits in it in, and don't worry about anything else, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, get it in and doesn't have to make sense.
They're just not picking up what we're putting down. But the problem is, nowadays with the referees, who's putting it down? That's the problem.
I mean, I agree with you, man. I mean, but the referees can only do so much. You know, of course, you know, you got the reputations like you guys would have. They would listen to you, or you would think they would listen to you, but sometimes you got referees out there, they're working with bigger stars, and they're just there to make the three count. They're not going to speak up and, you know, say, well, how about we, you know, maybe give it a different way, or, you know, hey, this, you know, I would do this in this situation, you know, how do we respond to where the referee doesn't look like a fool? And they want to get out there, and it's a spot fest, and they want to get the reaction from the crowd. And of course, we all want to get the reaction of the crowd, but they're just looking for the, you know, this is awesome chance. And, you know, and what, get that, check the social media when you're done. And, you know,
five stars. Oh,
good Lord.
Jesus
Christ. Hey, Chris, this is what we're going to do, buddy. We're going to take a break here. We're going to head back to our third count. We're going to have some questions for you, man. We're going to get into your, what you're doing and social medias and all that stuff. But when we do that, we're going to be kind of digging. I've got a couple little things I want to dig in for you that these guys don't know about, and you're going to know about and remember, I'm sure. But we're going to do all that when we get back, and we'll come back with our third count.
This is your three count.
Welcome back to our third count as we welcome back our guest, my friend, Wildcat Chris Harris. Chris, I have a question for you. We did some Hermie Sadler shows back in the day. And for those listeners that don't know what we're talking about, Hermie Sadler is a race car driver who took a big interest in TNA and actually had a spot in TNA when they were on TV, where I think they called it the, you may be able to help me here, the Hermie's something or another. It was a segment where he did interviews, but anyway, had a huge interest in it and decided to run his own house shows, which was all TNA. I don't know the deal that him and Jeff Jarrett worked out. I don't care, Chris. I'm sure you didn't, because this was extra money for us. And it was great. It was wonderful. And I wanted to know if you remember anything about a show we tried to run, which had never been done, on an indie type thing with TNA in Connecticut.
Yeah, I remember Hermie's shows. I loved them. It was like the first of the TNA house shows. Running it with Hermie. Yeah, they were real successful too. I mean, they did great, but yeah, there was that one in it's coming back to me, but yeah, the one in Connecticut.
Well, we were all there, and we had it all set up. Fans were outside waiting in lines. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we were shut down by the public authority that said we weren't running the show properly and said we didn't have the proper amenities, such as bathrooms and things like that, which we had run in buildings much smaller than the one we were running in, and we were shut down. And we were sitting in this place, and I remember in a room, there was me, you, SoCal Val, James Storm, Hermie. People wouldn't remember the other guy, but anyway, sitting around, and we were like, what is going on here? And Hermie was on the phone and said this show was shut down by a certain individual because they ran in his area in town. And at this point in time, TNA was a very hot product. They were on the rise, and we were running somewhere where I guess we shouldn't have. Do you remember who that was?
It's kind of coming back to me. I do remember this as you're talking about it, and I don't remember all the details to it, but yeah, it kind of came out that I don't remember from who, but I believe it was WWE.
It was
either. Threw a wrench at us and shut it down somehow. But yeah, it would make sense because yeah, we were hot at the time, and I don't know, I'm not saying we were a threat to them or anything, but obviously we must have been something, or they were just hot because we were running their town, or yeah, I'm not sure what it was, but that's the story I got, was that they had something to do with it.
And they did, because we were actually pre-warned, and I know you remember this, that me and my dad used to ride with Hermie. And we would get there and help do all kinds of things. And Hermie had this fear that this show had some kind of, maybe a hesitation of happening. It was actually the most sold tickets we had ever had. And this place was jam packed and sold out. And do you remember moving venues? We tried to move venues to another venue that evening. Do you remember that portion of it?
Not really.
Okay, it's okay. Well, we did.
I've been hitting the head a lot, man.
That's all right. It's all right. So is me and Jimmy. I don't know how I remember this shit.
too many ref bumps.
yes. But no, we tried to move venues. We tried to do everything we could to accommodate it, and it just got shut down no matter where we did, what we did. So I just thought that was very interesting. Very, very interesting. And it was, like I said, it was a time where TNA was picking up steam. And Hermie was gambling, and he wanted to get to that area to see what we could do. It was just
he must have known something going into that area, though. He must have known that was going to be a risk. If we remember him being on the phone right after that was all shut down and him finding out some answers, then what you said, he must have known it was a gamble and a risk. And when it was shut down, he may not have been surprised. I can't remember, but yeah, that was the word I got. I don't know. You'd probably know more than I would, because you and your dad were real close with Hermie, but from as far as the talent goes, that's kind of the word we got, was that WWE was doing something for whatever reason. We can speculate, but for whatever reason, they didn't want another wrestling promotion running in that area.
I find that very interesting. That's an interesting story, because, back in the territory days and when the big expansion began for WWF at the time, isn't that exactly what they did, is run other people's territories?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I find that very interesting that they would, I guess because it was in their backyard, for lack of a better term.
Maybe that's it. I don't know. I guess we were the outlaw promotion that time, coming in their territory.
well, another problem too, and another big angle, was when Billy Gunn and Brian Road Dogg.
Yeah, they were did up there.
Yeah, the VKM. Remember the VKM? Yeah. They were running that gimmick, and they did an open challenge or whatever, and basically we were able to, say that we were coming to that area, and it was like an open challenge that said, if anybody wants to stop VKM, we'll be in your territory. da 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 da, da meaning, you know, come on, Vince. And I think I think it was taken personal by somebody, not saying necessarily Vince, but I think it was taken personal, and they just said, you know what? Fuck you, motherfuckers. We're shutting you down. How about that?
Was that around the same time?
It was. It was.
Oh, yeah, it could have had something to do with it, man. People get vindictive.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm gonna bring it back a little bit to a different note, because everybody started their fandom somewhere. And I always get fascinated by where people's fandoms began and where yours began, because mine began, of course, up here in Toronto, getting, you know, privileged to watch the Mid-Atlantic territory, which is what I first fell in love with. And Maple Leaf Wrestling used a lot of talent from Mid-Atlantic. How did your fandom begin, and what was your favorite territory to enjoy and watch?
Well, I have to be honest. When I became a fan, it was all the TV product. I'm in the Cincinnati area, and while, you know, Kentucky had its, you know, had its groups in there in the Tennessee and all that area, I just didn't know enough about it. I was a TV fan. So I got hooked on, you know, WWF and NWA, because that's all, you know, what I got. So, yeah, I started watching probably 86, and just, you know, I was kind of getting hooked on that, and, you know, starting to follow the storylines. And I just, you know, I really thought it was cool. And I started to, and so I started in the buildup for like Mania 3. And, you know, I was getting really into that. And I know a lot of people always go back to that show, but, that's really what did it, man. When I, you know, within, you know, the first several months of me becoming a fan, and then to see WrestleMania 3 and what that produced, and then what did it for me, the match that did it for me, like it did it for a lot of people, was Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Randy Savage. That's mm-hmm. the match. I mean, when I saw that match, and I just saw, I can't say that I saw the art that they were doing, but as a fan, it kept me mm-hmm. so into it. And when I saw the reaction of the crowd from what they were doing, that's when I started, feeling it. That's when I was like, you know, man, this is, I'm in, I'm hooked in this. And that's when I started thinking, you know, this is something I wanted to get into. But that's what really did it, man. It was that match, and I just became a huge Randy Savage fan after that.
So there was a time too, Chris, that I, you know, between WWE and my TNA days, there was a little lull there of years where I was booking shows and stuff, and I called you up and I said to you, would you like to work a show? And you said, absolutely, for you, absolutely, no problem. How much? And I gave you the figure, and you were like, oh, that's very fair, da da da. And we got you flown into Richmond. All right. And you flew into Richmond. We did this little show. You got treated very well. You got to stay at the Hebner compound, and you even went to the mother and father-in-law's house where they had this big ass pool and all this fucking food. Can you tell everybody how great I am?
Man, you treated me awesome. Yes. I got to stay with the family, and, Baby Hebner there, he put me up, and we had a great time. Yeah, we went over to the family's house and jumped in the pool, and kids everywhere, and all the food we could. And I'm pretty sure we put down some beverages as well. So yeah, man, I do remember that. That's yeah, very very cool. And honestly, that came back to my memory when I got the call from you about this, because I was like, you know, that reminded me of, you know, that time that we were there. And yeah, you opened your door to me, and I stayed there. So yeah, that was such a great time, and I don't forget that, man. I really appreciated it.
Well, here's what I remember about that. I remember that everyone was in awe, because, you know, they were like, oh my God, we got this guy coming to our house, and my mother-in-law, who is just over the top anyway. And she was just like, oh my God, how big is he? He's got to be able to eat so much. And I'm like, just make the food. He'll be, it's fine. It's no big deal. You don't have to go to Food Lion and buy an extra pound of fucking hamburger wings or hamburger, you know,
and wings
and the wings. Yes. Put one more in front of the other. I am thinking really like hard right now. Anyway, I remember getting there. I remember sitting there. I remember grilling out. And I don't remember much after that because me and you were really, really enjoying our time. And the only thing I remember is taking your ass to the airport early in the morning and regretting all that we did between that time.
Yeah, it was probably an early morning for us. So that's, but you know, but I guess we're used to that. That's, you know, up, you know, having some fun the night before and then early flight. So it was nothing that we hadn't done before, but yeah, man, I'm pretty, that had to be a day off. So I'm sure you went back and you probably got the crash, but then again, I don't know. You had the kids around, so maybe not.
No, I didn't, but it's okay. It was all for you, buddy.
There you go.
Brian mentioned, you know, your first run there in 96 there with WWE. 2008, you know, you left TNA, you went over to WWE there as Braden Walker. You know, a lot of people, myself included, were like, okay, well, this is going to be, you know, this is going to be it. You know, we're going to see him in big stage. WrestleMania matches is obviously coming up this weekend. You know, these big major pay-per-views. Never really materialized. Was there like a specific thing that would happen, or was it just kind of like, okay, well, kind of ran its course?
Yeah, man, I thought the same way you did. I thought, okay, it's time to, you know, we're gonna see what this is. And yeah, when I first came in, it was they made a big deal out of it, and they were treating me great when I first got there. But yeah, there, as far as anything specific, no, there's no one thing. It was a mixture of things. It was just there was a lot of things that went into that, but it just turned out to be nothing like I thought it was going to be. It was a horrible experience. The best I can say is they just, once I got signed, they had no plans whatsoever. They put no thought into it as to what was going on. And there were several times where I would ask, or I even put in some suggestions or some thoughts. And, you know, I would have a meeting with the writers, and then I would talk to this person, talk to that person. And without going into so much, there was no thought, nothing going into it. And then by the time I debuted, it was the most generic debut that anybody had ever seen. I mean, I looked generic, nothing behind the music, nothing behind the name, nothing behind anything. It was like,
right.
There was no story, no background, no nothing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'll try to take as much responsibility as I can. I don't know. I was in a new company, so I didn't speak up a lot. I was kind of, you know, keeping my mouth shut and doing what I was told. And, you know, of course, you know, when you think you have to do over again, you're like, yeah, I'd do different. You know, maybe I would have spoken up or something. But, yeah, I just don't think they had any real plans at all. And it showed. There was just nothing to it. And as generic. Mm-hmm. And bland as I felt it was, that's exactly what was presented on TV. And so there was really no reason for the fans to get behind me. There was nothing there. There was nothing there to get behind. So that fell short. By the time all that was going on, I mean, I wanted out of there so bad. And so I was happy to get the release. So yeah, just a horrible experience for me. But, you know, I always say that's just my experience. Some have great experiences, some have bad, some are there for a long time, some for a short time. With everything it was doing to me, I was glad that mine was a short run, because I don't know how long I could have handled in a situation like that.
The classic creatives got nothing for you kind of thing. And please tell me, who can we blame for coming up with the name Braden Walker? I mean, you talk about generic entrances. That sounds like such. They had something, Wildcat Chris Harris. That's a T-shirt. That's a thing you can put on the Tron. You know what I mean? I don't get it sometimes.
Brandon, yeah, but be honest with you, Jimmy. Like, a lot of people ask me about that. When I went to the WWE, I pretty much went in with the intention that there was never going to be a Wildcat Chris Harris. I kind of accepted that going into it. I mean, if that's what I got, hell yeah, I would have been very happy. But
I kind of went in knowing that that wasn't going to be, that it was going to be a different name. But I didn't care what the name was. As generic as it was, I was willing to make that work. I was like, Braden Walker, fine. You know, I'll make it work. Just give me the chance, because I was just so confident in my ability. I was like, just give me something so I can run with and let's go with it. But when you add a generic name on top of generic across the board, that's when it becomes a problem. And like, just to give you an example, R-Truth, who amazing, the fact that he's been there. We went together. We signed at the same time. We made the transition from TNA to WWE together. Amazing that he's been there this entire time. He's one of the best. When we went in, you know, I got what I got. And then what they did with Ron Killings, they sent a TV crew to his neighborhood, to his house. They started filming, kind of like, you know, coming up from, you know, in the streets and just the way he was brought up. And they were just telling a little bit of a background story, to kind of give some character to him. And of course, you know, that red light comes on. Ron can be R-Truth can be a character. I mean, that's all he needs is for that light to come on and he'll entertain you. So I definitely, you know, he probably had that above me too, but just any kind of a backstory that they were giving him. And then he has his rap and they let him use, because the song he comes out to is his music. So he could use that. So there was just a lot more that went into him. And so when he gets debuted, it's like, there's something to that. There's some sizzle with that, to where people can get behind it. And with me, it was just, you know, just as, I mean,
yeah,
you know, I know nobody's ever going to remember the music, but it was the most generic music that I think I'd ever heard. And, you know, the name, I could have got over the name, because I felt like I could have, you know, I could have made something work. I mean, you know, hell, Nick Namath made Dolph Ziggler work, you know, I mean, we could have easily said that was a generic name, but he made that work. So, yeah, it was just, I don't know, just nothing behind it. I don't think I was even a thought on anybody's, I was not on anybody's radar, something like that. So when you don't have the machine behind you, it makes it really tough. And, you know, I'm preaching to guys that have been there and know this. So so you've seen the good and bad and ugly. So in fact, Jimmy, you were probably there. I mean, I was there in 08, so you were there. Yeah. For all this, you probably don't even remember it, because it was so bland. I mean, I was just another one of the guys.
Yeah, and you were also a part of, I guess, a lot with the ECW brand that they had acquired, doing, you know, on that brand. So
that's correct. That's when that was going on, and
but if I'm not mistaken, we were taping on the same nights, were we not?
It was probably a SmackDown, that they were taping. But they were, I mean, I think they were bringing in somebody every week. So there was name after name after name coming in, and they, you know, just, I think they were just seeing what would work, you know. And I don't remember anybody getting that kind of a debut where anything really stuck. So I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of, I can point a lot of fingers, and a lot of people want to point at me, and I'll accept responsibility for, you know, I mean, whatever I could have done. I wish I could have done something different, but I, you know, that's just one of those things. I tried to, once I got out, I just tried to chalk it up with, you know, that was my experience. I tried it, it didn't work. And now I, at least I know now, I mean, at least I didn't go the rest of my career thinking, you know, what if I didn't have that what if moment, because, you know, I know what it was like, and it wasn't there for me. I mean, could have been timing. I know it wasn't, but a few years later that, you know, guys like AJ and Samoa Joe and Bobby Roode and, you know, Eric Young, those guys were coming in and doing something. They were using their names, and, you know, so you know, I'd like to think that maybe something different would have happened, but you know, we just never know. And so, you know, I try not to dwell on it. You know, it was a learning experience.
Well, you heard CM Punk. He said that he couldn't have had his gray beard grayish beard when it came to the old regime, which would mean Vince McMahon. That's now accepted. Strange how things work.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely would have been a lot different now. I mean,
you know, under a lot to do with it. I would definitely feel more comfortable if I was one of those guys, you know, working under Triple H rather than Vince. So yeah, I mean, timing's everything, man. It just wasn't meant to be.
It's all good. Mm-hmm. Well, Chris, we've reached a portion of our show where you it's all about you. Put your social medias over. Put anything over you're doing, all your stuff. And it's all you know.
All right, man. Well, yeah, my social media, my Twitter, AMW Wildcat. Always you can get a hold of me on there for anything, appearances. My Instagram is, hey, you like how I said Twitter, Brian?
I did like it.
Yes. Instagram yes, is AMW Wildcat Chris Harris. Just any of the social media to find me for anything. I do. I love the conventions. I'm really into that now because you can we sign and take pictures and we don't have to get beat up. So I love
absolutely
and get to see all the old gang.
That's one of my favorite things about doing those, man. Is when I always look and see who's going to be there because I just love to be able to, you know, catch up with everybody. You know, it's just, especially now and, you know, just with so many that we lose as the years go on, you know, it's just, some of them are so surprising. And so, yeah, every chance I get to talk to some of the guys, it's just, I love it. And I've, you know, gotten actually developed relationships with people that I never thought I would. So, that's probably the best part about it, but, yeah, I do a lot of appearances, signings, conventions, things like that. That's what I love to do. Once in a while, I'll get talked into getting back in there again. Storm and I just did something up in Chillicothe, Ohio for Bobby Fulton. He runs some great shows up there.
Nice.
And he brought Storm and I in. Very nice. And we actually worked a match with Rob Van Dam and Matt Riddle. So that was fun.
Nice.
Cool. Yeah, so a little America's Most Wanted, the heel version of America's Most Wanted, got in there with the guys. So that was a lot of fun. So yeah, once in a while, Storm and I we do the conventions together sometimes, and we'll once in a while get in the ring together. And but yeah, man, I'm just out there trying to hang on everything I can with wrestling, man. I love it, and you know, doing my thing locally in the Cincinnati area. We got our promotion here that we're running, so that keeps me busy. And then, you know, bookings elsewhere. I just love getting out there and try to stay busy with that. So, yeah, man, just doing great.
Last thing before you get out of here, put over your Twitter again because you did have a audio going on and we only heard a little bit of it. Get the whole thing in.
It's at AMW Wildcat, and the Instagram is at AMW Wildcat Chris Harris.
Perfect. Perfect.
There we go. Get in there.
Well, Chris, thank you so much, buddy, for joining. You know, I love you and you know, I will talk to you probably tomorrow or tonight or whatever. I'm so glad we got you on. You are such a good dude. There's so many stories I could tell that probably shouldn't be told. And
save those for when you call them later.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hey, a lot of those stories involved your dad too, man. I love him with all my heart. I love him. And it was always a pleasure when you guys came over to TNA and we were having the Hebners referee our matches. So that was really cool. But yeah, your dad, your uncle, you, man. Yeah, we had some great times.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you so much. I can't tell you how much we really are appreciative that you were able to join tonight. And I'll send you some stuff too afterwards. You'll get your show art and all that stuff. So
that's awesome. It was an honor, guys. Thank you so much. Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you, RJ. I really appreciate it. And yeah, it's been great being on here with you guys.
You are tuned to Ruffin and Up!
Guys, that was absolutely phenomenal. I just wanted to point out one thing, guys, for if you guys were listening to that, Chris had a thunderstorm go through his area there. So if the audio was a little bit off, we apologize. Definitely love to have him on, and you know, just talk shop. And that's what we've really come accustomed to. Jimmy, man, Got a lot of great stuff coming up. You and Brian will be at the Busted Open Party this weekend, this Saturday from 2 to 4 at the 2300 Arena. Doors open at 12, like we mentioned earlier. So definitely, if you're in the area, check them out. Go over and say hello. Just don't make Brian mad. Jimmy's the nice guy. Remember that. But Jimmy, man, cop, before we cop. Get to... yeah, right. But before that, how can people get a hold of you? Check out your great stuff that you got going on.
Well, thanks. Like you said, first and foremost, can't wait for this Saturday. The Busted Open Party at the 2300 Arena is going to be awesome. B-Hab and I are going to be there representing the Roughing It Up podcast. Come over and say hi. Or if you want to get counted out, have somebody pin you so we can count or do something. Or you may be DQ'd, whatever the case may be. But yeah, you can check me out here every week on the Riffing It Up podcast with you guys, having a blast as always. Chris Harris was awesome tonight. You can check me out also on the Wrestling Inc. podcast, post Monday nights after Raw and post Dynamite on Wednesday nights. And also my Riffing Review. Riffing Rant.
Well, you're on that. You're on that too, Jimmy.
Platforms.
You're on that too.
Yeah. Hey, don't get hot.
Don't get hot.
Okay.
But if you but do want to get hot, yeah,
the reference.
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, yeah. Okay.
No, you're good.
Yeah. Move. If you want to get hot, move south. Anyways, yeah. The reference rants Monday to Friday on all my social media platforms. Just having a lot of fun finding things that I can critique and also put over. Sometimes I do put over stuff, guys. Just watch and pay attention. Anyways, that's it for me. And also, like you said, RJ, thank you guys for another great week.
Yeah. All right, yeah, well, I was gonna say, get hot, go down to Richmond area, and you can go check out Brian.
Oh, that'll really make you hot just coming here, no matter what the temperature is. but yeah, so I'm totally stoked about getting out of here, Richmond, as you just said, and getting to Philadelphia and doing this Busted Open Party. Cannot wait. I can't wait actually to hang out with Jimmy for a little bit too, because we haven't actually hung out. And Jimmy, are you going to have some adult drinks?
We'll have to discuss that.
Oh, off air? Yeah. Okay. All right.
That'll be an off air thing.
All right. Cool. All right. I didn't mean like me. I'm just saying like in general. All right. But anyway, we'll talk about that. The wife better have some adult drinks. She'll probably be the one that drinks more with me than you will.
Yeah, you may be right about that. But
Yes, thank you all very much for tuning in. I've got two social medias. That's it. That's all I care about. And by the way, Jimmy, I'm not counting anybody out. I'm not counting 1, 2, 3. I'm going to be an AEW referee, and it's a tornado match. I don't give a fuck.
Oh, good idea. That. Good call. Good call. I'm in.
Yes,
I'm
exactly. You. All right. So on my Twitter account, it's at Baby Hebner. On my Instagram account, it's at Baby Hebner. And guess what? That's all I got. RJ, sign us out. Let's get out of here. Let's get to Philadelphia.
Awesome. So you can follow the show's page at Reffin It Up, excuse me, on Instagram and Twitter. Shout outs to JD Hoop. Check him out this weekend. I guarantee you, you'll see some gear designs by him and Rod. AJ McKay, fantastic to have him on board as well. Stay tuned. We'll have a special announcement, special guest for next week. Stay tuned to all our social medias for that announcement. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here this week. Guys, hit them up. You're in Philadelphia. Go over, say hi. And with that being said, for Mr. Jimmy Corderas and Mr. Brian Hebner, I am RJ. We will see you here next week on Reffin' It Up.
1, 2, 3.